Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
But you know what else is really bizarre? It's also in New York, in Brooklyn. Steve Nash is out. We kind of knew there was writing on the wall, truly, in the sense that someone's going to take the fall, and it's not going to be Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving's almost on his way out anyways, right, because going into a contract year. But 7 games in, Kurt, 2-5 record, before a game, mind you.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
That was surprising to me. It was just how fast. I kind of thought Nash, I'm like you, like I think everybody, and frankly, like the shocked Kevin Durant. I think we all kind of thought Nash might ultimately be the scapegoat, the fall guy here. And not that he's completely blameless, but he was going to be the guy to take the fall for this. I just didn't think it was going to be 7 games into the season. I didn't think it was going to be this fast. I mean, yeah, they're now 2-6. They looked distracted and awful last night, except for Kevin Durant, who put up, 36. But Kyrie had an off night. All their flaws, I think that was what was crazy. They fire Steve Nash. They go out against the Bulls at home, and all their flaws are on display. They can't defend. They can't defend inside. I mean, Kevin Durant's the guy who's got a matchup on Vucevic because he's the best defender they've got for somebody of that size. And they're skilled big men all over the East that are hard matchups. You know, like their problems are still there, and whoever they, you know, we can talk, we'll get into this, whoever's the coach, whatever the structural issues, I don't think go away, do they, Kevin? I mean, Kevin Durant would probably agree with me, but Corey, how do you?
These are the existential questions we're shouting on the rooftops, right, in LA and in New York. Will they, Kevin? No, it's true. I mean, I think I agree with you. This does not fix the underlying illness that is in Brooklyn, you know, like it's just something on top here. It's just topical. Jock Vaughn is now, the assistant coach. Jock Vaughn is now the acting head coach. Right. There's a search. Some names that were thrown out: Quinn Snyder, but also the suspended Ime Udoka is now. You know, reports are coming out that he's going to be at least the front runner for the head coach position. How is that even possible? You know, it's like given this climate, given what just happened in Boston. How is this even possible, Kurt?
That's the kind of wild thing, is that this is a team that's already, and I don't know if we're going to go really far down this road, but is already dealing with the fallout from the Kyrie PR disaster, and not just a PR disaster, I mean, beyond that, but dealing with the ramifications of Kyrie's tweet of the kind of anti-Semitic, not kind of, the anti-Semitic movie. And now you're going to go hire a coach who, I mean, again, we don't know all the details, Corey. They let go. They suspended for a year the coach that took them to the finals last year in his rookie year. Like, it's serious enough for Boston to consider that they had to do that for their organization. And the Nets are going to be, I mean, is it weird that the Nets are now just going to be, come on in?
Yeah, I think it's extremely weird. I think the word that comes to my mind is desperate.
Yeah.
And when you're desperate, you make, you know, some questionable decisions, to say the least. But you know what I was thinking, Kurt? I do a lot of my thinking on walks. You know, it is what it is. And I was walking, and it kind of just hit me. You know, remember when at the beginning of this, Sean Marks' tenure at Brooklyn, we were all amazed. At least I was. I was like, what they're doing in Brooklyn is special. You know, like they're building something incredible. And we were just thinking it's a matter of time before they win a championship. The question is how many, right? It's just like a constellation of stars. They're building this really deep bench. Role players are buying in. Like, ownership wants to spend. Like, everything was aligning. I thought this was going to be beautiful. And you have great, you know, people, you know, in the executive positions, like Sean Marks, doing making good decisions. And then we're starting to see, like you said, the flaws. Everything's starting to become exposed. And we're starting to see a naked Brooklyn. And it is shocking because I think what happened is they were focused too much on the embellishments around the building and not the foundation. And the foundation was Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. And that foundation has continued through the years as, you know, just chaos, quite frankly. And every year, like we talked about this before, last year it was for Kyrie, it was injuries when he first got there. Then it was, injuries with Kevin Durant and Kyrie the next year. And then there was the vaccine mandate. Then this year it's this PR disaster. And now this organization continues to go that direction and wants to hire Ime Udoka. To me, it's just like, what is going on?
It's strange to me because you think back to when Sean Marks got the GM job, and it was arguably the hardest job in the league at that time because Billy King had they had nothing in the cupboard. They had traded away all those picks to the Celtics to make that all-in move with Garnett and Pierce. It was a hard rebuilding job, and they spent years. They find Spencer Dinwiddie. They find Joe Harris. They find these guys. They draft. They develop. They, you know, the Nick Claxton. They find these kind of players and build up the kind of core that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving go, I don't want to play there. Like, if we're going to get together, that's the place we got to go. And it feels like when they got there, they went from this team that built this selfless culture with Kenny Atkinson as coach. The stars come in and go, I don't like this selfless coach. Kenny's out. I don't want Kenny Atkinson as coach. And everything has been acquiescing to what those stars wanted. We've just got to keep them happy. And when we do, everything's going to come together. And I think you got to draw lines, right? You got to draw lines, Corey, or the organization falters.
You look at the Lakers, you know, and you read like Jeannie Buss's comments about, you know, how you have to work with the players. It's a player-led organization, or, you know, there has to be some serious partnership there. I think that's great. But at the same time, too, yeah, there needs to be lines. And there it seems like there is a massive cost, you know, to too much. And this is hard because the question of player control, you know, has never been in the player's favor, like historically in professional sports. So, you know, it's very hard for, you know, someone who's very pro player to then say, well, actually there needs to be a little bit more control, right? Because you're kind of taking back all those gains from decades of hard work, but it just doesn't seem sustainable, and it doesn't seem realistic. You know, like it's the definition of a streetwear opera, in my opinion, where you got the divas saying, okay, I'm not going to go on in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the coach is like a first year coach or a second year coach has to like deal and massage, you know, these egos. And then championships on the line. And then who knows, after 7 games, you might get fired. You know, who knows, after winning a championship like Frank Vogel in LA, you might get fired. Like, no one's safe.
Yeah. And I think that's where we've talked about it before. You obviously grew up around it in San Antonio. I think, you know, you get it in Miami. You've got it for a while in Utah with Center. There's something to a strong organizational culture where, hey, to use another example, Myers Leonard last year, remember, said something anti-Semitic on Twitch while playing a video game. Like, it just wasn't like some planned tweet. $50,000 fine, suspended from team activities, has to go through counseling. We're not messing around with this kind of thing, right? Like, we're going to step forward, and this is how we hold people accountable in our culture for those kind of things. We hold them accountable in film rooms, on defense. And I feel like the Nets just didn't have that. It feels like there's nobody holding anybody accountable, which is apparently what they expect Ime Udoka to be able to do. He certainly has that skill set where he can talk to guys without bruising egos, which I think, isn't that part of the trick, Corey? Like, if you're in that locker room and you've been in those locker rooms, is calling a guy out for it, you know, when you were at Notre Dame, calling a guy out for missing a block or whatever without tearing them down.
Yeah, that's the secret of elite sports, because everyone can play and everyone's talented. The teams that are successful, the coach's job is not to teach, you know, Tom Brady football, you know, like the coach's job is not to teach Jason Tatum basketball. You know, at that level, your job as a coach is to be like Phil Jackson. And he was, you know, a consummate, you know, professional at this, which is you're basically a psychologist or a therapist trying to put people in positions to be successful and getting someone to believe in their role. I think, you know, one of my favorite stories is the Boston Celtics. With Frank Ramsey, with the sixth man of the year, basically started that idea. It's like, well, you have Bill Russell. You know, think about that, to those teams that won all those championships. And then Auerbach just goes in and says, look, you are our starter off the bench. Like, that is the perfect example of that. Like, you're just working egos and making sure people understand what, like, their value is to the team and how they can help you be successful. And if you can get them to believe that, then you end up having a franchise like the Celtics. And then what you said also with all the strong culture and the accountability, you look at recently, even though the San Antonio Spurs aren't playing well and they haven't been playing well for a few years.
Well, 5-2, I think, right? Like, yeah, they're playing pretty well.
Right. Thank you. That was very kind of you. But, you know, but you think about Josh Primo. Same thing. Like, he was one of the most promising young guys on that team, and then he gets waived, and it's almost like it shocked everyone. You know, like reading about him, like, how did this happen? He clears waivers, and more information is coming out. But another example of look, this is what happens in strong cultures.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, Phil Jackson's great gift, I think, wasn't just getting people to buy into roles. You, me, everybody, we all buy into a role better when we think it's our idea, right? Like, if it's your idea, you're more invested in it. Phil was so good at getting you to do what he wanted you to do, but think it was your own idea that you just totally bought in. He was such a master of manipulation with that. And so guys were all in because this is what I want to do. I want to just, I'm Dwight Howard. I just want to rebound. I'm like, no, you don't, but you think you do.
Yeah, it's all Jedi mind tricks. That is the that's the secret of being, like, you need to be Obi-Wan Kenobi to be a great coach, you know, at that level. It's just, you want to be a reminder.
And we'll see what comes next. I mean, I'll ask you really quickly. Do you think whoever is next, can they coach grit? Can you coach grit into a team, or is that innate?
I mean, that's one thing from this Nets organization that concerns me.
Yeah.
Especially, and this is like underscored, if you're talking about like, Chiascura, you know, it's an art term of like the, like when you kind of like the hazy kind of thing around a line, that kind of like almost like a smeary kind of look. The line is Kevin Durant wanted to bail out after signing a contract extension last year because he thought that this team didn't have like that is like the definition of like, wait a second, red flag. Your leader like looks at this and says, we don't have grit. And then this year, you know, you look at some of the comments coming out post games, like we look lifeless. Like, it's not even just about playing basketball. It's like, we need to have pride in what we do as professionals and go out there and play the game the right way. Like, we look like there's no energy. That is extremely shocking to me. I think that is probably one endemic of this Nets organization as far as one of the root causes, you know, of all this chaos and the illness that I mentioned earlier. But I do think, Kurt, that we're going to see a little bit of a blip. I think it's going to go the way that Atlanta went when they fired, remember that? And Lord, I think it's going to go like that. But ultimately the question with the Nets is, well, what's the end goal? Is it to get to the, you know, deep in the playoffs, or is it to win a championship, especially given the time horizon that they're in, which is a year. And so I think they're going to fall short of their goal again, but I think it's going to kick them in, you know, in the pants.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
What would you say, Corey, man? I think Nets fans are just singing the blues right now, but we need some other musical vibes for players out there. So I think it's time to jump into my favorite new segment, Corey's Jukebox. And Corey, what songs do you have for guys this week?
You know, let's stick with the Nets here. Kyrie. So
okay, good.
I want to go with him first because we did Kevin Durant last week and the Blueprint, Jay-Z. This week, it's going to be La Traviata. Do you listen to Giuseppe Verdi?
Do I? I have seen, like, my best friend from college is a music director, sang with the Dallas Metropolitan Opera. So I'm like the one person who, because my friend was doing it, and I like classical music, but my friend was doing it. I have seen pretty much every major opera. So I have seen La Traviata. I've seen them all.
Fantastic. Bravo, Kurt.
I would like to take credit for this, but I was just kind of supporting my buddy. So, you know,
look,
nonetheless, I've seen them all.
I mean, this is out of like this is amazing. So yes, so you know this opera well then, and I too love opera. And so with the La Traviata, it's actually Italian for the fallen woman, which is an interesting idea. But Act Three, so there's this prelude, and that's what I love about Verdi's operas is that there's this beautiful prelude, and this prelude is ominous. It starts the whole. I mean, clearly it's like it's opera and it's Italian opera.
So it's
And it's a
over the
tragedy. So
top.
something bad is going to happen, and in the but it's a rich, complex, beautiful thing. You look at the way Kyrie Irving appreciate basically thinks about sports. He's the maestro, right? He thinks of it like an artist. So with this one, I wanted to do Act Three, that prelude, which leads into the actual tragedy itself. So it's Prelude Anina Commendate. Listen to that song. It's a 10-minute song, so it's pretty long, but that feeling, I think, is Kyrie Irving right now, going into the third act at the Nets, ostensibly maybe his last act, going into this contract year. What's going to happen? And everything that's swirling around the Nets right now, it always, I think, unfairly lands on Kyrie, but he also invites, and courts that kind of attention. That's like this fallen woman type of attention. It seems like you're this brilliant player, but why? Why is there this prelude of it's like this insidious prelude that follows him everywhere he goes, and I don't understand why. So that's why I wanted to go La Traviata first. I think this is the beginning of another tragedy in Brooklyn.
And for people who don't think La Traviata is one of those, by the way, where you don't think you know opera, but then you hear parts of La Traviata and it's Carmen and some of these others where you're like, oh yeah, no, I know that. Yeah, no, they're almost part of the cultural identity when you hear some of this. So you would know it. You don't think you know it, but you know it.
So that's why I think so. The Kyrie's there. So I want to just think what happens. How does this opera end in Brooklyn? That's what I'm thinking. And Detroit, I don't think it's going to go well. And Detroit, I had to go, Detroit, you have to go Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, get a Motown. Yeah, there you
Yeah.
go.
So I went with What's Going On. And I went with the song, not the album. I want to go with What's Going On, Kurt, because I watched them play recently and they impressed me. But they also are very confusing. Like this Detroit team, I don't know. Like,
Yeah.
just let me get you, give me your thoughts really quick on them before I dive into this.
No, I kind of agree. Like, there is the talent when you watch them is obviously there. Cade Cunningham is special. He's got change of speed and everything. Jaden Ivey can be special. That guy's, he's got a burst. He's got a real like explosion. There's Stewart and all these other guys. Like, there's just good talent on the roster, but it's young and does it fit together? I don't know if it will fit together. Like, I just don't know. They're so, it's too early to know yet.
Exactly. I mean, I saw them play the Warriors, and you see them. It was a little jarring for me because I was watching them play, and I thought they don't look good. They're 2-6, and I was like, they don't look good. But then I looked at the stats while I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking, wow, they have less turnovers than the Warriors. I'm looking at I'm looking at points off of turnovers, point like fast break points. I'm looking at defense efficiency. I'm like, whoa, like they're actually on number wise, like pretty neck and neck with the Warriors right now, the defending champs. And this was like around halftime of the game. I was so confused. I was like, how does this team play keep up with the Warriors? And I think it's back to this idea of, well, this is like a micro and a macro issue. And that's what I mean by what's going on. On a micro issue, they're a team that clearly doesn't have leadership because like their franchise player is like 20 or early 20s,
Or
like
whatever.
just came
Yeah.
out of, out of college. But I also think the macro of that is, you don't have leadership and chemistry. Also the chemistry, because Marvin Bagley is there, Sadiq Bey, like you have all these kind of like pieces there that are young, like you said, that exciting core. But the macro piece of this is that the league itself is not encouraging teams to have these like long-term sustainable franchises anymore. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. It just seems as though you're almost training these teams to draft young, go through a really bad 7 or 8 years, and then by the time they mature, they're off, and then they go play the free agency game, and then it's like, well, we're in the Nets situation all over again,
There's a real challenge there for guys who are slower developing and programs are slower developing. Because if you don't have I'm going to use a different team as an example. If you don't have Ja Morant, who just vaults you up there really quickly and helps build, I mean, they were building a culture with the Desmond Baines and the Brandon Clarks and on and on. Like, they were building something there. But if you don't have a Ja Morant-like talent that suddenly gets you winning and gets everybody to buy in, you run into that problem, don't you? You run into that, I've been here. And sometimes it's deserved. Hey, for all the crap Anthony Davis takes, I don't really blame him for wanting out of New Orleans after. Like, he waited forever. They never built something that worked for him. But you've got to give it a chance. And it feels like just that, that sometimes you're the Kansas City Royals being a farm system for the Yankees, right?
No, yeah, it's just very, like in art, there's that idea of like, well, you have the small galleries that then, you know, find somebody, discover them, and then build them up. And then they get poached by the huge world famous galleries and their prices just skyrocket. And then, you know, the small galleries are left, you know, out of the water. It's like, well, wait, we found you. And now you're selling work for hundreds of thousands of dollars and you kind of abandoned us. Like, what happened? And I think that same phenomenon is happening in the NBA. And there really is no quick fix here. There's no antidote, especially now that the NBA wants to kind of, you know, go back to the draft age out of high school. So when I think about this, Kurt, I think about it basically like this. I think about it like you have a, I think the peak for a franchise player, and there are very few franchise players. I think we can agree on that. Like real franchise players, not people who are filling a role, right?
No. But what are there? Maybe 10 guys? Maybe,
right? And that's like a third of the league. So you think, okay, a third of teams get lucky, right? And find somebody they can actually build around. Fantastic. If you are one of those one third of the teams, then you think, okay, well, historically, you think year 7, year 8, year 9. That's probably where the franchise player is going to win their first championship, right? Somewhere in that phase of their career, which means you got to go through some growing pains and there's no patience anymore. Plus you have the older guys, this older generation of guys who are the superstars. They think of it, well, I need to get paid first. Then they kind of sober up somewhere in their late 20s and they say, okay, well, I've got all my personal accolades. I got my money. Now I want to win. Right. So then you get into that early 30s. All I want to do is just win now. I'm 32 years old. I was a former number one overall draft pick, and I'm willing to get the veteran minimum, or I'll just sign anywhere. I just want to join a super team and win as quickly as possible. And then those guys are your veteran leaders coming in to help those 20-year-old franchise players win a championship, and that doesn't work. So that's I think it's like this really strange scenario that then makes players, you know, teams like the Suns, what they're doing with Devin Booker, and, you know, like the Warriors, what they're doing with their young core of James Wiseman, Kuminga, Poole, and then, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies with Ja Morant, it makes them very interesting because they are like the few doing this. That's my take.
No, I totally actually get that. I think that it's a weird situation where we'll see if that changes. I think Giannis sort of changes the dynamic a little in the conversation because now they built something around him, but he stayed and won. And I think a lot of young players like that idea. At least they're giving lip service to it. You know, I want to be a Grizzly for life. I want to be a Piston for life, whatever. We'll see what happens 6-7 years in. And you're right. It takes time. It took Jordan 7th year, if I remember right. It takes, unless you're Magic Johnson and walking into that situation.
But he had Kareem.
That's not the norm.
That's what I'm saying. But like Tim Duncan won in his second year, but he had my dad, David Robinson. Right. And then Magic had Kareem. And, you know, so like those guys, like it's a little like Kyrie Irving also won early, but he had LeBron.
Yeah. In fact, remember how bad that team was before LeBron showed up when it was just the Kyrie show? There was some talent there, but that was a pretty rough years.
Yeah. So now it's funny. Let's go back to we talked about LeBron. Let's go to the Lakers really quick. Miles Turner recently was on a podcast and he said that if he were the Lakers, they should take a hard look at him. What do you think about this?
The trade that will never die. We've been talking about this since what? July. Like this has been out there and on the table. I'm really curious what the Lakers are thinking internally now, because they did, has been discussed, they seriously considered this trade, very seriously considered making this deal, and ultimately didn't do it. And now if you make a trade, if you're the Lakers, Corey, is, I guess the question for me is, if you're the Lakers, outside of some blockbuster we don't see coming down the pike, you know, if you trade for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield, wow, instead of like fighting to make the play-in, you're now the seven seed. Is that good enough? Are you going to give up two picks so you can be a solid team? Or do you, I mean, it's hard with 38-year-old LeBron. Do you tank a year? Not tank a year, but like ride this out and use those picks and some cap space you've got next year to retool this roster. Like, I don't know that there's a good option there, but I'd be curious to see what you think. Like, they have to feel pressure.
Certainly. I think this is going to be the same thing as Brooklyn in the sense of, well, once Russell Westbrook takes the fall, I think that's kind of like the next thing in the tea leaves, right? Like someone's going to take the fall. And I feel like they've kind of anointed Russell Westbrook to be that person. Then what happens next? And I think that this is going to be a scenario in which you're right. Nothing really is aligned, you know, like LeBron's contract, trying to figure out, well, where the team, the current state of affairs with the team right now, the new head coach. It's just like, well, and Miles Turner also is in the last year of his contract. So it's like, okay, well, you think, okay, well, how does this make sense? You know, like what does this look like? How can I build a Lakers team that's good for a year, for 2 years versus a year that's, you know, a team that's good for 5 years or 10 years? And there's just no way I think this team could go from where it is right now to a championship contender, you know, in the next year, right?
No, I don't see how. I am curious, by the way, to get your thoughts. This is the 1 millionth bit of news this year over the last couple of years to come out of a player podcast. Draymond started them, and J.J. Redick has a great one, but with the best name, by the way. Old Man in the Three remains the best name for a former player podcast. Do you listen to any of these? What do you think of them?
The Hemingway reference is nice. I think it's an interesting manipulation, because for me, I'm always thinking, well, how do you think about leverage? And these guys are all looking for leverage. And this is one way. You think about in the old days when you wanted to get a message out, you had to go on like the Tonight Show. Right. You had to go on, like, you had to get interviewed by Vanity Fair, by the New York Times. And recently, I don't know if you saw this, but like the spread that Town and Country did on LeBron James and his family, they positioned themselves as like the Black Rockefellers. But like that's how people used to do it. Like, you know, Steph would do something with Rolling Stone. Right. Like that's how it all used to be. But now, since everyone has a podcast, you have a platform with millions of followers. You could just go direct. You don't. And then once you make a statement, then ESPN invites you on the show, or NBC invites you on the show, or the Rolling Stone wants to interview you after you made your statement on Instagram or on the podcast. So I think that's a really interesting kind of reversal, but it does not mean that you should take advantage of that, you know? And I think this is one of those scenarios where it's just like, to me, I think it's so fascinating. Like when you lobby for yourself and play your own agent and try to, you know, be your own master of your destiny, I don't think that's a very good look personally.
It's an interesting one too, because like you said, Draymond's kind of the king of this. If you say it on your podcast, it gets aggregated everywhere through social media, right? Like it's a huge, I mean, it's the way of the world though now, isn't it, Corey? Like you feel like you can control the message more. Is that the key?
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's more like, okay, well, you know, what do I want to accomplish and how do I get there? Yes. I think that's very much a part of it. But the reality is the work should do the talking, you know, and like that's how I feel about all of these things. Like if you're a Hall of Famer, the body of work should proclaim you as a Hall of Famer. You know, you shouldn't have to go on a podcast and lobby for it. And you shouldn't have like a PR campaign or like a publicist say, oh, my client is a Hall of Famer, or, you know, my client should be on this team. My client can help. To me, it's like you have all those years in Indiana. That's the body of work. You know, like everyone watches the NBA. They all watch games. Can you actually bring value or not? So I'm more old school in that way. The body of work should always speak. And I think it speaks much more than a Rolling Stones article or than a, you know, Vanity Fair article or a Town and Country article or whatever those things might be, or a podcast. I just watch the games.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't know. We're getting away from the games, Corey, man. The games are passe.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the game, and that's what the issue I think the NBA is dealing with. This is like super meta. We went straight. I mean, we started with like T-Rexes and Tinkerbell, and then we went into Verity yes. and opera. And now we're talking about this esoteric streetwear opera. But you're right. Like, people go to basketball games, I think, half the time just to watch celebrities watch basketball. And I think like that like is different. You know, like that whole concept of like the celebrity aspect of pop culture. And I think that's also compounded by the fact, Kurt, that like the NBA, the games are not interesting, you know, for the most part. Like, there's only a few really like high key, like marquee games. And then
this is that's the theory of scarcity that makes football thrive, right? Part of what works for football is every week matters, right? Every game matters. If you're Tennessee, Georgia this week obviously matters, but like I was trying to pick a random team. Clemson plays Notre Dame. That game matters, right? It matters to both sides. Those kinds of – that kind of scarcity that the NBA doesn't have. Baseball's never had, but you don't think of it that way. It's one of those questions with basketball about how do you make the regular season more interesting, because look at the Warriors playing right now. Like, they're running a marathon. They know they're running a marathon. They're 3-5. They're not stressing. Like, it's like they know where they need to be at the end of the season, and they'll be there.
Yeah. And then I think that just creates this void of like, well, engaging content. And that's why you have NBA Twitter being such a big thing, you know, because people, you know, it's like you'd almost want to see them, especially now with the paychecks and, you know, with it's almost like acting, you know, back in the old days, if you had a celebrity couple, you know, if you wanted to really lean into young celebrity, you would like getting into another like celebrity couple was a great way to launch your own career, you know, so agents would set other actors up. And that's kind of what we see now. It's like this NBA player is dating this model, you know, or this NBA player is dating this, you know, like singer or whatever it might be. It's just kind of like it's just like a weird flowering of like celebrity culture. It's kind of like, I think about the NBA right now as what the 90s, like what acting was in the 90s, you know, as far as movies concerned, professional athletes are like the new actors. So like, that's kind of like, oh, you want to be famous. You date a professional athlete, and then both of your profiles go up. It's just very strange. But what did you think about Zion? You know, he's back and healthy, and he's playing pretty well.
I actually got to see him. I went Saturday to Staples Center and got to watch him firsthand. And I got to say, Corey, what jumps out now, it's not just, look, he's still a physical force of nature inside. He is so strong, so big, so hard to control. But his passing is really good, Corey. Like, he's become a really good passer and a really good, and he talked about it, how the game is kind of, especially after missing a lot of last year, he feels like the game has slowed down for him, that he's kind of always, and I think going back to Duke, he racked up assists, but he's like, the game's really slowed down for me now. I can go inside. I can wait for this guy. And he's making not just the first pass, but he's had a couple of like skip passes crossed to guys who were open. He's finding shooters. And then that's the other part of it. Pelicans got shooters, man. Trey Murphy was knocking them down. Brandon Ingram wasn't in this game because he's been out with concussion protocols, but he'll be back soon. You go on and on down that roster. They just got guys who can shoot, and suddenly you've got a collapse on Zion. No, he's still – the Clippers did as well, I think, as you could one-on-one for stretches with him, because Zubats is big, pretty mobile. Like, he's a really – why did the Lakers give him up again? Like, he's a really solid defender inside. And he still can't. Like, Zion's too quick and too strong, and you can't control him. But now you throw that passing in there to shooters. Pelicans are building something, Corey, I think. Don't yes. you get that feeling? Like, it's something. It's something good.
Yes. And, yeah, I saw Zion play too, and I was just thinking, how do you stop him? Like, the only defensive maneuver you can employ is the charge. Like, you know, just take a charge. Like, it's just – I mean, he's like – it's incredible. So, yeah, I think like for them, it's just a question of – I also, by the way, I just want to throw Alvarado, Jose.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite players in the NBA right now, just because, you know, I like players. Like, I remember what Caruso was to the Lakers, you know, or like what Harris is to the Nets. Like, that guy just plays with such passion and grit that yes. I think, you know, like the emotional, as far as just like emotional leader of like, we never back down. We're the, you know, the underdogs. Like, chip on our shoulder. I think he brings a lot to that team in that regard.
I wanted, if there was one thing I wanted out of Saturday against the Clippers, was one Grand Theft Alvarado where he sneaks up behind the guy, bringing the ball up, right, and just takes it. I so wanted that, and he almost got one. I'm going to forget now. I believe it was Reggie Jackson had the ball, and he's bringing it over half court. And suddenly you see not only Ty Lue, but the entire Clipper bench, like, jump up and start screaming at him. He starts with heads on a swivel to figure out where it's coming from so he doesn't get picked and end up on, like, a SportsCenter highlight. So I'm just desperate to see one of those in person.
Grand Theft Alvarado is probably one of the great. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing. So let's do some matchups, shall we? Let's do a quick lightning round. So we got some games coming up. The Wednesday games, Boston at Cleveland, Pelicans at Lakers. Who you got and why?
I'm actually excited about Boston and Cleveland. Cleveland is playing some of the best basketball in the league. Donovan Mitchell is through the roof, better than advertised and everything. And they're, by the way, top 10 defense again, going against the Celtics, who are starting to put it together a little bit. I am excited to see that game, Corey. What about you?
I'm going to go Pelicans-Lakers, just because of all the reasons. Maybe there's a Grand Theft Alvarado. but Pelicans for sure. I want to see more Pelicans. Zion, more Pelicans.
Friday night in your neck of the woods, 76ers and Knicks, or Pelicans and Warriors on Friday?
I'm gonna go with the Knicks here because I think basketball is a lot like football in the sense that when the Cowboys are good, it's good for everybody. When the Knicks are good, it's good for everybody. And I feel like the Knicks, I know that they have struggled. They're not very good. But you look at the games and, like, they're playing some good teams close. They went to overtime with Memphis, you know. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe they catch a 76ers team that's a little, you know, a little wounded right now. So I think I'm going to go Knicks on that one. What about you?
You're just kissing up to producer Dan. Let's
be honest. That's right. I forgot. Dan also is a huge Knicks fan, and Joe. They're both huge Knicks fans.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. I don't know. Pelicans Warriors is going to be fun. I think, like I said, I'm just high on the Pelicans right now. They are, I think, my league pass favorite. They're just entertaining to watch. They're so good in person. If you're in the Bay Area, go see them. And the Warriors can flip that switch whenever they want, man. And this might be one of those games where they decide to flip it because they want to make a statement. It'll be fun. You get into Saturday, your Spurs, Denver Nuggets.
Say no more. Spurs. Go Spurs, go. So so the next game, let's just move on to the next game. Spurs win a million to nothing. Next game, Blazers at Suns.
Blazers at Suns is going to be interesting because I was more excited about this game before. I don't think Damian Lillard will be back from the strained calf yet. He's out 1 to 2 weeks. They will rightfully take their time with him, bringing him back. But that is a real, like, we've talked about them before, all the athleticism they put around Damian Lillard now with Anthony Simons, with Jeremy Grant, with just a deeper, more longer bench. It's fun. So I will be watching that game, and I've written about the Suns already, man. We got to stop taking the Suns for granted. They are maybe the best team in basketball right now, top five offense and defense.
And Sunday, the wrap up of the weekend, Jazz at Clippers. This one's pretty tough.
Tough. The Jazz are legit, and the Clippers are not playing like a team that's legit. We'll see if Kawhi Leonard's back. The Clippers are a weird mix, Corey. I got to say, just watching them now in person a few times, they're trying to blend. Last year, remember the 43-point shots a game, balls flying around. They don't have one great shot creator, so they're relying kind of on system and shooting and ball movement. And now they're trying to integrate that with the isolation-heavy ball that Kawhi Leonard wants to play when he gets back. He's only played a couple games. Paul George plays that way. And they have not figured out how to balance that yet. And talk about a team running a marathon, because it's you say something to that to Ty Lue about that, and he's like, and Nick Batum said the same thing to me. He's like, it's going to take a couple months. It's going to take us a couple months to balance this out. I'm like, Christmas? Like, what are you figuring this out, man?
A couple months. Yeah, it's like 2 months in one day. Like what does a couple months mean? Yeah, I think the Jazz are going to sneak one here. You know, I think the Jazz are not going to be able – I think they're going to be perishable goods in the sense that I think it's going to be like that milk with the expiration date. It's going to taste really good for about a week or so, but then eventually you're like, this milk is going to, you know, sour. Right now, the milk is good. So I think the Jazz are going to sneak one on the Clippers, personally.
That's really possible.
Yeah. So now, look, Dan, our producer, was, you know, we talked about our Halloweens. Apparently, he heard Christmas music wafting wherever he was on Halloween evening, Halloween evening. And I got to ask you, when do you start playing Christmas music at home?
I'm old school, man. On the way home from Thanksgiving dinner with at my brother's, where he hosts every year, I will put it on. We'll put the Christmas music on. Until then, no, it is. I love Thanksgiving. I like fall. I like that whole experience, but I don't. I in the start of winter, like it's sweater time. Like I don't want. I'm not ready for Christmas yet. I'm not ready. And by the way, it's out there. Like I went to buy Halloween candy for the house and you know, for the trick or treaters. Whole wall of Christmas, like all the you know Christmas displays are up in the store. I'm like, really already? But I can't get there. What about you?
I love Christmas. So I am like a Christmas in June kind of guy. I mean, I also just love Christmas music. I think Christmas music is great music. Like the Christmas song by Nat King Cole is just, I mean, it plays like year round, you know, like it's just a great song. So like Johnny Mathis, like his Christmas music. Like, so when I think about Christmas music, I was listening to Luther Vandross's Christmas album just a couple weeks ago, just cause I love like Luther, you know what I'm saying? So like, I just love Christmas music generally. It's just because it reminds me a lot of like the grandeur of like the big band era, you know, like a Frank Sinatra album. But, you know, it's just everyone knows the lyrics to every, you know, you know every song. So it's kind of like watching, like it's like comfort music. Like, you know, you just know how the movie's going to end. That's I know how these songs go. I listen to them every year. So I really like Christmas music year round. But I know that it's very, you know, I don't play it in front of other people. I would never play it with you. I only play Christmas music by myself when I, you know, year round.
I think one of the fun parts too is, there's, I don't want to say a limited number of standards, but there's a certain number of standards out there. But it's fun to hear everything from these kind of big band styles through a rockabilly style, through a R&B style, through a punk, whatever you want to do. Like you can kind of do these songs in so many genres that it that's kind of the fun of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very, that's a great point. I never thought about that. Yeah, just the variety, it's kind of like it's a very, it morphs, you know, it's something that's so familiar, but you can make it strange every year, which is a remarkable quality. And for a person like me, like I love, you know, classics. This is once again, back to the esoteric. I love classics. And like one of my old professors always would tell us, like, if you're a writer, make it strange again, like make it strange again. That's the key to relevance. And I think Christmas music does that really well. And same with like those video games. Like, you know, you think about Mario, like it's like the same game over and over again, but Super Mario keeps reinventing itself for like Sonic the Hedgehog. Like some of these, like, you know, Mickey Mouse, there are certain things that like are so familiar, but you just put Mickey Mouse on a boat. Then you put Mickey Mouse, you know, at a Halloween, like or a House of Horrors, like you just keep moving him around and it keeps it new and interesting. That's how I feel about Christmas music. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But anyways, for more information on NBA, and remember, NBA Christmas is like,
it's a big star on top.
Yeah. So, and by the way, Kurt, I know you're not into it yet, but they just announced that the 82 foot tree is going to go to a rock center soon.
Oh yeah. I have been there when the tree is up and skated in the, done the complete tourist thing, skated in the thing. It's actually beautiful. It's awesome. If I had unlimited money and time, I'd spend more of New York and Christmas in New York, man. It's
the best. It's the best time of year. But for more information on NBA stuff, head over to NBCSports.com/PBT. As always, Kurt, it's a pleasure. Talk to you next week.
I can't wait, man.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.